And that was the complete version of the theme song that I play on the my program. And this has been your host, David Brown, bringing you 3 hours of classical music. And I'll be with you again in 3 weeks. Please stay tuned in the following two Saturdays when Jim Wiener will be with you or Valerie Jean. You're listening to WSB Stony Brook 90.1 on your FM stereo dial. And this is Stardate coming up.
Stardate April 23rd. This is a red letter day for us, Astronomy Day, in cities and towns all over North America. Astronomy Day is a special day for those who don't know much about the sky but who want to learn. Star parties are the main event on most astronomy days. A star party is what happens when you've got at least one person with a telescope willing to show other folks what's up there. In big cities that have large astronomy clubs, you might find several people with telescopes today. They might be set up in parks or at shopping centers, anywhere people are likely to gather. That's the whole idea behind Astronomy Day. It's meant to give people a chance to turn on to astronomy. The first Astronomy Day was in 1973 in the San Francisco Bay Area. Now lots of places celebrate the day, maybe also the place where you live. Local astronomy clubs or museums sometimes sponsor the activities of the day. They might offer a variety of events, star parties, slideshows, displays of astrophotography, or maybe a public lecture on astronomy. Our advice is to check your local newspaper or listen to the radio for word of any possible events where you live. That's Astronomy Day today. The nice thing about this day is that if you can't find any special activities in your town, you can celebrate it all by yourself, just by going outside at night and looking up. This is Stardate, and we at Stardate would like to send you something that's free, a complimentary copy of our new Stardate magazine. If you'd like to receive one, send us your name and address here at the University of Texas McDonald Observatory in Austin, Texas. Our zip code is 78712. And when you're doing that, would you let us know where you listen to Stardate? For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
Changed. The new number is 2. Please make a note of it.
Please repeat.
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Ring damage.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Is
you say? 9.
Just hold on a second.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
Jünger als ich.
Whack a ball with such velocity, I do the round.
and Farrah. Macon, Roddy, John Travolta, Governor Brown and Linda. Interview and People magazine with Rona and the Queen. It must be really frightful to attract publicity high to the rock. My talk. Carter, Begin, and Sadat, Red Mertens, and Castro. Every day negotiate as close as to disaster. Idi Amin and the Shah and Al Fatah is quite blah. I could never get the hang of Idi Al-Bashir.
I woke up this morning, and that song was for some reason playing in my head, and it's odd because I didn't have the radio on, and I didn't have any reason to think of this song, but there it was. I Do the Rock by Tim Curry from 1979, and kind of an interesting song because it brings to mind so many of the current events of that day, which no longer apply, or just no longer are in the news. Edith Sitwell giving readings, 14 Moscow Road. I mean, I don't even know what that means. Osbert's giving champagne parties. Saatchi's got a cold. Gertrude's hanging pictures. Alice making tea. Me, I do the only thing that still makes sense to me. Now, I'd like to know if someone can refresh me as to who Alice is and why she was making tea back in 1979. Which Gertrude it was that was hanging pictures. Who Saatchi is, and did he ever get over the cold? Now, of course, John and Yoko farming beef. That we're familiar with, because they did have a farm in upstate New York, and that's exactly what they did. Rodney's feeling sexy, Rod Stewart, of course. Mick is really frightfully bold. Mick Jagger, who in fact is in the news still, in court today. Maybe we'll get to that a little bit later. It's stimulating. Solzhenitsyn. I never could say his name back then or now. Solzhenitsyn. Well, never mind that. We all know who he is. He's that Russian guy that defected, and now he is living inside a barbed wire prison of his own making up in New Hampshire or somewhere because he doesn't want people bothering him. Einstein celebrating 10 decades. But I'm afraid philosophy is just too much responsibility for me. Baby Ruth and Dizzy Dean, Best and Colin Cowdrey, Little Mo, Virginia Wade, Pistol Pete, and O.J. Liz and Dick and Britt and Liza, Jacqueline, Kate and Farrah, Meg and Roddy, John Travolta, Governor Brown and Linda, Interview and People Magazine, Miss Rona and the Queen. It must be really frightful to attract publicity. And finally, Carter, Begin, and Sadat. Remember them? Brezhnev, Deng, and Castro. Every day negotiate us closer to disaster. Idi Amin and the Shah and Al Fatah is quite bizarre. I could never get the hang of ideology. Songs that that have current events in them, I always like those because they're just interesting to listen to. Both then and now. Some of them don't age well. I think this song aged well. From the Fearless album. Try finding this. If you really want a challenge, try finding this this record at a record store in the city or someplace. Because there are some other good songs on here as well. Paradise Garage. And something short of Paradise, too. Apparently there's a theme in this album. Right on the Money, S.O.S., and so on and so forth. Now, Mick Jagger, of course, we've all been hearing things in the newspaper, and unfortunately, I came into the studio tonight, and I totally forgot about this Mick Jagger thing. I was going to go searching through the record library, trying to find the reggae song that Mick Jagger is being sued for allegedly copying. In fact, yesterday he entertained a courtroom filled with fans as he recited old hits in an attempt to prove that his 1985 song, Just Another Night, wasn't copied from a song with the exact same title, written 6 years earlier by a reggae musician. Patrick Alley, 36, has charged that Jagger lifted the chorus from his 1979 song, Just Another Night. He is suing Jagger for copyright infringement. And to show how he tends to use repetition as a lyrical device, Jagger half-sang, half-spoke lyrics from such Rolling Stones hits as Brown Sugar, Miss You, and Let's Spend the Night Together. He swayed a bit and came close to singing as he told judge and jury, Jumping Jack Flash, it's a gas, gas, gas. Most of Jagger's second day on the stand was devoted to tapes detailing the evolution of his song. The jury and packed courtroom heard at least six versions of the tune. The version that was released was recorded in May 1984. And the interesting part is it was recorded in Nassau, the Bahamas, with drummer Sly Dunbar. That was the album with Sly and Robbie Shakespeare on bass. Alley claims Dunbar played for his recording in 1979, and Dunbar has testified that he didn't remember whether he played for Alley. And if you ever look at reggae records, you'll understand why Sly and Robbie appear on just about every record ever made. Seems like they're the only bass and drum people around, or just people that everybody wants to get at some point. They did put out their own album, too. A lot of bass and drum on it, but that's something else. Jagger testified that the lyrics were not finished when Dunbar recorded the music for his album. Alley's lawyers have said Jagger's version netted as much as $6 million. Key to the case is that both choruses use the phrase Just Another Night repeatedly, which sort of makes sense, a song called Just Another Night. The chorus of Alley's song goes, Can I spend another, just another night, just another night, just another night with you? Jagger's lines are, Give me just another night with you. Give me just another kiss, just before the dawn breaks through. Jagger testified that such repetitions were common in popular music, prompting U.S. District Judge Gerald Gautel to mention a previous case of his involving the phrase, It's your thing, do what you want to do, which Gautel said was by the Everly Brothers. It wasn't the Everly Brothers, Judge, said Jagger. The questioning moved on, and Gautel burst out, The Isley Brothers, or was that Isley Brothers? That's right, the Isley Brothers, said Jagger. After the testimony, Jagger signed autographs in the courtroom, told reporters he thought the case was going well. And that account came from today's Newsday. Mick Jagger in court. Oh, boy, how exciting that is. Not as exciting as some other things going on, though. Among them, the whole election business that seems to be, I wouldn't say heating up is the proper word, but continuing at a frenzied pace. We'll get more into that in just a couple of minutes. First, why don't we look at the news? News, just a very short news minute, as we call it. Latest horror stories. What was a crowded vegetable market in Tripoli, Lebanon, now resembles a war zone following a car bombing that killed 54 people. Some 125 others were injured, and hospitals in Lebanon's second-largest city are packed with the victims. Workers have recovered the bodies of the last of five people killed in yesterday's grain elevator explosion in Joliet, Illinois. Three bodies were found today after the searchers dug through debris, corn, and soybeans. Officials in Burnaby, British Columbia, have their own mess to search through. A rooftop parking deck collapsed today during the grand opening of a grocery store, injuring 16. Minority students are occupying a building at Williams College in Massachusetts for a second day in a protest against racial hiring practices at the school. The demonstration comes as Parents Weekend is underway at the Liberal Arts College. A new study says that restoring tropical forests could cause a slowdown in the expected greenhouse effect, warming of the earth. The World Watch Institute says the growing trees would absorb carbon dioxide, the principal gas responsible for the warming. And that is the news. And speaking of news, I don't know if anyone has gotten around to announcing this officially, but beginning on, take a look at the calendar here, May 9th, Monday, May 9th, WUSB will be airing the Pacifica News Report, which, if you're familiar with, has a reputation for all kinds of aggressive reporting, reporting that has many times almost been stifled, but carries through nonetheless. We will be airing it every weekday night, or weekday evening at 6 p.m., the Pacifica News Report, a half hour of international and national news that you just don't hear anyplace else. Even National Public Radio doesn't do it justice. Pacifica Radio News coming May 9th on this station, 6 o'clock every weekday night. So something to look forward to. If you thought of ending it all, it's no point. I mean, you've got this coming in May, and you will learn something from it. Quite a bit, in fact. Now, get on to the elections, or the primaries, and we'll be taking phone calls. Our phone number is 632-6901, area code 516-632-6901. I'd like to find out who our listeners voted for, if our listeners voted. I must admit, I didn't vote, and it's for a rather silly reason. I'm not registered as a Democrat. I like to register myself as an independent, and kind of annoyed that I can't vote in this part of the process simply because I don't want to align myself with a particular party. I mean, I'd like to be able to have a say in whether Pat Robertson gets it over George Bush. I'd also like to have a say as to Jackson, Dukakis, or that other one that dropped out, Gore, right, or Simon, or any of them. Why should I have to wait until November? Just because I don't want to align myself with the party. It doesn't seem all that democratic. But I'd like to know if folks out there agree, if they voted for anyone in particular, or stayed home, or what. 632-6901. Taking a look at the delegate situation, the current breakdown of the presidential preference of the delegates to the Democratic and Republican National Conventions. Democratic, of course, Dukakis is ahead with 1,075.15. I don't know how he got 0.15, and from here on I will not give the decimal points. He has 1,075 delegates. Jesse Jackson has 836. 599 are uncommitted. Gore has 427, and Simon has 184, even though both of them have pretty much dropped out of the race. They need 2,081 to be nominated. Dukakis is pretty much halfway there. And I'm not quite sure what uncommitted. Uncommitted, I thought, was the number left, so it's not. There are a total of 4,161 delegate votes, so there's 1,038 more. 599 remain uncommitted. And in the Republican side of things, George Bush has 1,081 delegates, 208 remain uncommitted, and Pat Robertson has 31. He only needs 957 votes. 957 more. No, that's not right either. He only needs about 100, less than 100. He's at 1,081. He needs 1,139 to be nominated. So it's a pretty good possibility that George Bush will be the Republican nominee. And Dukakis has a lead over Jackson, which I'm sure most of you knew. 632-6901 is our telephone number. And good evening. You are on Brain Damage.
Yep. I voted for Dukakis. I'm a registered Democrat.
Uh-huh. And why did you vote for Dukakis over Jackson, over Gore?
Well, Gore, I guess he needs a little bit more experience, really. He just became a senator a few years ago, and Governor Dukakis has been in there for like 9 years. And Jackson, Jackson has a constituency, but, if William Gray was running or something like him or Andrew Young, maybe it would make sense. I think Jackson's a little bit too, I don't know if he's arrogant, but he just rubs people the wrong way. It's fine that, black people are running for president. It's just not, he's not the kind of guy I would vote for.
Well, now, what would pretend Jackson isn't black for a moment and
try to not vote for him.
Oh, because he's arrogant.
Yeah. By the way, I graduated from SUSB 17 years ago.
17 years? Were we around that long?
Yes, 71.
That's only 1971. You know, I can't conceive of time going by so fast. 1971 was 17 years ago.
This is the first time I've been able to hear USB out in Nassau County. I got a new radio, and for some reason it's picking it up for the first time in a long, long time.
Yeah, well, we sent some Israeli commandos out to bomb the radio station at 90.3. They must have finished...
Up your transmitter?
No, we haven't. Actually, we just got our new tube put in. We're back to where we were about a week ago.
How much power are you running?
We have 4,000 watts, just like we always have, and...
Okay, well, this is the first time I've been able to hear it, and very good.
What part of Nassau County are you in?
Wait.
Excuse me?
You take requests?
We take requests when we play music. We don't play music till midnight, though, on Saturday nights. But what's your request? I'll make sure.
Anything by the Moody Blues.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Feeling sentimental tonight, eh?
Well, I've got just about every compact disc of theirs, and I wish they came out with some of their stuff from the solo stuff on compact disc, and I don't think they're going to do it.
Do they have the first Moody Blues album, Go Now, on compact disc?
Yeah, they have Go Now. I saw it in a store. But I want them to come out with From Mighty Oaks and some of the other solo stuff. Blue Jays just came out, but they got a PolyGram has got to get on the stick and come out with all their solos, not just one.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But, getting back to politics, I don't know. I really didn't enjoy the 60s, and I didn't like the yippies in the 60s and the yuppies in the 80s. I'm sort of like slightly left of center.
Well, now, you were around back in the 60s then. You were of thinking age back then. I mean, I was around the 60s, but I was a kid. I don't really remember things other than, you know, the Good Humor Man coming around.
What if it was 67?
Uh-huh. Let's go back to 1968. 20 years ago. Now,
believe it or not, I had hoped, I didn't vote in 68, I think I was too young, but I had hoped that Nixon would win just because of the way everything went out in Chicago there. I just turned off. But that's the last time I ever considered of hoping a Republican would win.
Uh-huh. Well, he did, and...
I didn't vote for any Republican, but as I said... Now, Nixon certainly set me straight on ever considering voting for Republican.
He kind of perhaps calmed things down, although, no, I guess that's not good at all. Maybe it seemed like he would calm things down.
Yeah. Now, I've been a Democrat for a long time, and I look at it this way. Just like Winston Churchill said that democracy is the best of the worst, as far as parties are concerned, the Democrats are the best of the worst.
Uh-huh.
And if you are an independent, and you certainly have a right to be, you are not allowed to vote in a Democratic primary. This fall, you'll certainly have your choice.
But you see, my point is the choice will already have been made for me. There'll only be two people to choose from, and I think we should all just vote when there's 50 candidates.
Actually, you could vote for anybody you want.
Oh, that's true.
As far
yeah.
as electors go, that's another matter.
Yeah. I've never.
You can vote for whoever. You can vote for Gus Hall or whoever you want to vote for.
Well, Gus Hall isn't running this year, I hear. He finally got fed up.
I mean, for Nassau County District Attorney, 2 years ago, I think I voted for Bill Baird.
Wow. I'm sure it helped.
Anyway, no. If you're an independent. Legally, you're not allowed to vote in the Democratic primary.
Well, now, the question that you supported Dukakis, the question I'm going to be asking tonight is, what would you think of a Dukakis-Jackson ticket? Do you think that would be possible?
I think that would probably lose. Probably lose. I think, I heard Nixon saying on TV, saying that he thinks the Democrats should pick up... Samuel Nunn. I think whatever Nixon says is definitely biased, and he wants the Democrats to pick up Nunn because he thinks that inside his heart he knows that that it's going to lose. So I think he's just trying to lead the Democrats astray. I think the Democrats are going to pick somebody from the West Coast, possibly.
Someone like Governor Brown if he comes back from wherever he's hanging out these days?
Saddlebrook, New Jersey.
What's that about Saddlebrook?
That Nixon, that's where Nixon lives.
He lives in Saddlebrook, New Jersey? I thought he lived in Long Beach. Did he move? That's right, he did move.
Yeah. No, he lives in Saddlebrook, New Jersey. And he made a quip about not getting into politics anymore. Saddlebrook has a fine mayor.
Well, that's nice of him to stay out of that.
Mm-hmm.
But they did a poll a couple of weeks ago where they said Dukakis and Jackson would whip Bush pretty handily because it's combining the support Dukakis has with the support that Jackson has, and Jackson has a lot of support. If those two forces can combine and all the bickering, I don't know if you've been watching the news over the last couple of days, but Jackson and Dukakis have not been fighting at all. They even held up their hands yesterday together.
Well, I'm glad to see that. Jackson knows...
I think they're up to something.
Jackson knows in his heart that there's no... See, I mean, it's not enough to nominate a Democrat who's going to appeal to the Democratic Party. They've got to appeal to the whole country.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, you know, a president is not a dictator. A president has to get along with Congress. So, yeah, I suppose if Jackson won... he would not be able to get everything he wanted because he's got a Congress that, I don't know, I think the Congress is slightly left of center, which is fine, but not too left of center.
Uh-huh. What do you think of Mayor Koch? What do you think he's been affected by all this?
Well, I look at Mayor Koch in two lights. I mean, as a mayor of New York City, you know, he's doing the best he can. As far as baiting Jackson... it wasn't the swiftest move in the world, but come 1989, he'll probably win again.
Think so? I saw some kind of a poll where most of the Democrats, overwhelmingly, in fact, said that he shouldn't run again. And considering that Koch is a Democrat, although he's sounding more and more like a Republican every day, I don't know what his chances will be.
Well,
I think Koch is going through a change of life where he's, as many people do, becoming more and more conservative as he gets older.
Well, the primaries draw the more active people. Now, that percentage may not reflect the general public.
Uh-huh.
That vote.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, I don't take much credence in polls anyway. And I don't understand when they say that this poll has a plus or minus 4% error. I don't understand what they mean by that. Does that mean that they could conceivably be wrong by only 4% or...
Put it this way. Let's see. Percentage of error... If I'm trying to think now, I think if you have a sample of 100, I think the error is 1%. No, there's something wrong with that.
Uh-huh.
Percentage of error will vary upon the larger the amount of the sample that you take. 4% error. I'm not exactly sure. But it does depend on the amount of people you poll, that's for sure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The more people, the bigger percentage of error?
No, the more people you sample, the less percentage is going to change of error.
Yeah.
So...
I see, yeah.
That's the way it works.
Well,
but it is funny, the way they only choose like 900 or 1,000 voters. Why don't they do, 5,000 voters or something like that, so their percentage of error would be a lot better.
Well, now, when we finally get our computers in order and start learning how to use technology a bit, it will certainly be possible for us just to simply key in and vote, much like those 900 numbers or the cube system in Ohio.
I don't think it'll ever happen.
I'm wondering if it ever will, too, because of the privacy concerns.
The potential is there for cheating, and... well, I mean, if somebody can break into HBO and, you know, transmit their own signal,
They're
certainly going to do something with the voting system.
Well, more than the capability of breaking in and changing things is the privacy concerns that people will have as far as, well, is my vote being looked at? And, of course, it can be if someone really wants to.
Yeah, that's not going to change. I just don't see it happen. But what they might do... is, well, it would be scary, but if everybody had a voting card that was intelligent, all they'd have to do, well, they'd vote like people in Congress would vote. I mean, that's how...
Yeah, on C-SPAN, electronically.
Yeah, I watched that quite a bit. And I tell you, I like that channel because, well, actually, yesterday I got to see Michael Dukakis speak in Pennsylvania for a half hour, live.
Uh-huh.
That's one thing, but, you know, it reflects real life. There's not much commentary there, and
that's what I like the best, the fact that they just show it and let you decide.
That's right. I like that. I mean, I like watching conventions on the major networks, but, you know, in fact, if I watch a convention, I'll probably watch it on the network, but for uh-huh. other things, watching a speech or something like that, yeah, I like watching C-SPAN.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind hearing Peter Jennings' impressions or John Chancellor's impressions of what's going on, but I also enjoy probably more than anything sitting around with a crowd of people watching television and making up our own ideas. Not making up, but coming up with our own ideas and perhaps ridiculing the whole thing. I think that's very important.
Do you think Cable News Network is a Republican channel?
I haven't seen that in a while because I can't get cable where I am, but...
Saw it.
I've seen it, and I don't know if it's Republican. What makes you obviously think it is? Why?
Well, Ted Turner owns it, and he has reflected some right-wing views in the past.
From what I've heard, and from almost every account I've read of Cable News Network, he stays out of the programming end of it, and they're very happy that he does. He has never tried to push his views.
Well, why was Daniel Shore let go?
I don't know. I don't know the story behind that. He had some kind of a disagreement, I believe, but I don't know if it was with Ted Turner.
Yeah. Same thing with News 12. They have Fran Purcell as a moderator.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they don't... I mean, he's obviously in the Grand Ole Party, and why don't they pick an independent to do political commentary on News 12?
Well, that's another one I've never seen, in fact, because I can't get cable. It's too bad that these services aren't available to everybody. Only if you're able to pay a certain amount of money every month, or if you're in the area that's wired up for it, can you get
at the university?
Channels. Excuse me?
You don't pipe it in at the university?
Well, I don't live at the university, but even if I did, I'd be out of luck because they don't pipe anything into here.
Oh.
I could put up a satellite dish, I guess, but I think it's scrambled.
I really don't know. But anyway, it is going to be a close election. I would definitely not vote for any Republican, much less George Bush. Bush has a, I don't know, Bush has this persona that I just don't like.
He's scary. I mean, he was the head of the CIA, and he has to still have a few friends over there.
I have a mental note of a cartoon that I would draw. If I was good to draw, it would be George Bush's resume, and you would start with, let's see, he was... appointed ambassador to China. So in one block, cartoon block, you would say, ambassador to China, appointed. And then Republican National Committee director, appointed. And then vice president, appointed. And then as in the next cartoon block, you'd see Bush with a dunce cap, and it would point, it would say, A, followed by pointed. Get it?
Yeah, that's not bad. Came up with that yourself, huh?
Yeah. No, he is appointed.
Uh-huh.
He's our appointed official. So he really has not, since he was in the House of Representatives, held elective office.
Uh-huh.
I mean, when you're vice president, really, you're not elected to office. The president is being voted for, not the vice president.
Uh-huh.
And Mike Dukakis has been elected governor of Massachusetts three times. And, you know, he's actually ran a government. George Bush loses either way. If he knew too much, then he's associated with Iran-Contra. And if he says he backs off that, then he's guilty of not... you know, not having any managerial experience. So that's why, well, anyway.
Well, who do you think Bush is going to choose as his vice president?
Bush?
Yeah.
I have no idea. I don't think he's going to pick Bob Dole. They seem to think either Governor Kane from New Jersey, which I don't think he'll pick.
How about Elizabeth Dole?
Governor Thompson, who, believe it or not, I saw on a documentary the other day on Channel 13. Jim Thompson, I think, was an assistant district attorney at one time in Illinois, and he was filmed in this documentary about some guy who, I think, committed murder and then was about to be, he was a long time on death row, and he was fighting the electric chair, and Jim Thompson was testifying in this hearing that was filmed. Anyway, he might pick Jim Thompson, not Duke Majin, because that would leave a Democrat to take over California as governor.
Uh-huh. True.
I won't take any more of your time. It's certainly been interesting.
Thanks for calling. What part of Nassau are you in?
Farmingdale.
I was there yesterday, in fact.
Oh, that's good.
Or not, 2 days ago.
A lot of people live here.
Uh-huh. Well, that's it's a nice town, except too many trucks driving on Route 110, but that's something else.
Yep. Well, anyway, it's good to hear this station. I haven't heard it for years.
Well, I hope you tune in. We're on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, bringing all kinds of great programming. Of course, as I mentioned before, we'll be having the Pacifica News report on every weekday at 6.
Yeah. Now that I can listen to it, I'll probably listen to it more. It seems interesting. It started off, it reminded me of Number 9.
Number 9.
Number 9.
Oh, the intro to the program.
Excuse me?
The intro to the program, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, people have said that, yes. Well, thanks very much for calling then.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye. 632-6901 is our telephone number. Talking about the elections, Jesse Jackson running, and Michael Dukakis, and George Bush. And as I said a couple of weeks ago, if we do have Jesse Jackson as a vice presidential running mate with Michael Dukakis, it's an interesting ticket. We have a vice president who's black. We have a president who knows how to speak Spanish. And we have a first lady who's a woman. Of course, she's a woman. That's not what I meant to say. She's a, what is she? She's Jewish. That's right. A first lady who's a Jewish woman. Yes. Do they have children, do you know? The Dukakis's? Then she's a Jewish mother. What more could you want? There'll be one big happy family in that White House there, so...
I have a question. Have we ever had a Greek president?
A Greek president?
Isn't he Greek?
Dukakis sounds like a Greek name. Yeah, I didn't even think of that.
I know he's Greek Orthodox.
Uh-huh.
So, and I think he's Greek.
Well, that'd be nice, too.
Also, I don't think we've ever had a Michael for president.
I've been trying to analyze the other races that have happened in the last 20 years or so, and I've never found one that's been as interesting as this one. Last time was Mondale, and who was the vice president for Mondale, vice presidential candidate?
I have no idea.
Versus Reagan and Bush. Of course, Reagan and Bush won. Oh, I'm sorry, Ferraro, of course, Geraldine Ferraro. And that was 1984. 1980, of course, was Reagan and Bush. Versus, I'm embarrassing myself by not remembering.
Carter and Mondale.
Carter and Mondale, of course. But the fact that I'm forgetting this indicates that it's forgettable. I'm never going to forget Jesse Jackson and Michael Dukakis. I can forget Dole, I guess. I can forget Gore. I mix them up all the time, so I guess I can forget them. 1976, we had Reagan ran then, didn't he? But he didn't win. He didn't win the nomination. He won. He almost won the nomination, I think. But it was Ford and who?
Nixon.
Rockefeller? No, it was Ford and Rockefeller, I believe, against Carter and... Just let the phone ring and we will pick it up when we get to you. And you won't have to pay a penny until we pick it up because, well, that's just the way phones work. 632-6901.
Now, let me ask you something else.
Go
embarrass
ahead.
Myself in my memory.
Okay.
Who was the person who ran as an independent, I think, 8 years ago? Didn't someone run as an independent?
There was Barry Commoner of the Citizens Party, but there was also John Anderson?
It was Anderson, I think.
John, he's a musician, but I think he's also a presidential candidate, John Anderson, yes.
Is it the same man?
No, it's not.
Simon?
No, it's not. One has gray hair and one doesn't.
Like Paul Simon.
And he, yeah, a lot of rock people run. He did pretty well. He did well enough to get matching funds, but we never heard from him again. So that was the end of that. But yeah, that was kind of inspiring. We almost had sort of a democratic process at work there, which would have been nice. But Tuesday night, primary night, I actually was at one of the candidates' headquarters covering it for another radio station. And it was quite an interesting place to be. It was, I'll admit it, it was George Bush's headquarters. A crowd of people that I only could hang out there about an hour without getting violently ill, because some of the things these people were saying just rubbed me the wrong way. And some of the people were so young, and there were so many minorities there. It made you wonder, they just sort of ship these people in and say, hey, stand in prominent view so people will think that that Bush supporters are primarily black and Hispanic. It made me wonder. A lot of young people, young student-looking people with glasses, saying things like, Jesse Jackson wants to tax big business. Well, who is he to tax big business? It's not his money. It's big business's money. They're the ones that got it. You know? They didn't say and they said got, so that's why Jesse Jackson won't win, because he's got big business upset. And you know who really runs the country. But George Bush was not there. It was pretty much a crowd of people. And in fact, see if I have the souvenir that I got. Yes, I do, in fact. They had bowlfuls of fortune cookies, and the guy who made the fortune cookies was there. He was just sort of sitting at a table, and everyone would point at him and say, hey, that's the guy who made these fortune cookies. And you'd nod at him and sort of wave, and he'd nod back like some kind of sultan or something. And if you opened up the cookies, there was a fortune in them, and all the fortunes were exactly the same thing. And this is, by the way, the thickest fortune I've ever seen. It's seven lines long. Usually it's just one line long. And this is what the fortune said. Keep experience, knowledge, and best man for leadership needed to guide our country in office. Vote in the April 19, 1988 primary to elect presidential George Bush as a candidate for the Republican nomination.
That's very clever, I must admit.
It certainly is.
I've heard of.
But George Bush was not there. He was in Pennsylvania. I don't know why he was in Pennsylvania. I don't know why he has to even campaign anymore. He should have been in New York, where all these happy people were celebrating.
I'm sure people in Pennsylvania were happy, too.
These people were celebrating really nothing in particular. I mean, he's not running against anybody. He really is not running against... I mean, Pat Robertson... How many delegates does Pat Robertson have? 31. Bush has 1,081. Even if you take away 1,000 delegates, he's still ahead. So why are they celebrating? Why are they even spending all this money on fortune cookies and gatherings and things like that?
Because it's fun.
Oh.
So then, why did you take a fortune cookie?
Well, I did because I was hungry, and also I wanted to see what the fortune was. It looked, I'd never seen bowlfuls of fortune cookies before. It was quite a sight. But what got me was the fact that they were making fun of the Democrats over and over again. I like making fun of Democrats, too, but they kept saying, you know, if the Democrats ever get their act together and elect a candidate, we'll be happy to run against them. Now, these are the primaries. It's like the semifinals. You're supposed to be deciding who the candidate is. You don't decide that way in advance. So what's unnatural is to have a winner already at this point in the game, I think. I think there should be some sort of a process where the people decide. And that's what's happened in the Democratic race. We've seen Dukakis against Jackson and Gore. We've seen them debating and arguing. We've seen the whole thing develop. And Bush, it's just been boring. And I think if he gets elected, it's going to be a boring 4 or 8 years. Because the people there, they were dull. They were stodgy. You know, they were all dressed in these collars that, like, made them choke. And, you know, I just can't handle that kind of thing. But in any event, there was a high point to the evening. Bush called in by telephone to say, you know, hi, and I guess we won, didn't we? Isn't this nice? But it wasn't quite as smooth as all of that. For some reason, which I kind of understand, because I was standing right next to the phone as the call came in, every other word that George Bush said could not be heard by the people who were in the room. So you would hear him talking, but you'd only hear certain words And the response was incredible because nobody understood what he was saying. And I knew just what was wrong. I knew what button to press on the phone. You know, if I pressed the mute button on the speakerphone, it wouldn't have picked up the sound from the room, which was cutting out his voice. But I didn't want to do that. I thought this was too good an opportunity to pass up, to hear George Bush speaking to a crowd of people and people not understanding a word he said, and knowing that they can't understand a word he said, where, as usual, people only wonder if it's only them that doesn't understand what he's saying, you know? So I just kind of watched, and I was standing right next to the thing with the microphone, getting every instant of it. Every TV station, radio station that was there, and I heard them making this decision, decided to cut this part out because, well, we can't understand what he's saying. We can't put that on the air. However, the radio station that I was working for and this radio station here tonight will be airing George Bush's comments in full so that you, too, can hear how it was that that particular night at Republican headquarters in New York this past Tuesday. And quite a night it was there. I've never hung out in a place like that before. And, you know, what amazed me was I was standing right next to this phone. I could have said something to Bush right then and there, and he would have heard me very clearly.
Hi, George.
I wouldn't have said that. I would have said something else. But, you know, I had the credibility of other organizations on my back, so I didn't want to do that. Plus, it was just fun watching events unfold on their own. So what we're going to do, first we'll get out the phone number one more time so you can call up, give your comments and advice and all kinds of opinions and things like that. 632-6901, area code 516, 632-6901. I see some calls coming in, and what I'm asking those people on the other end of the phone to do is just hang on for about 4 minutes or so as we play this segment from Republican headquarters on Tuesday night, primary night. And then after we play that, we will go to the phones and you can have your say over the airwaves of WUSB in Stony Brook. And now let's go to Republican headquarters and hear the words of our vice president and presidential candidate, George Bush.
While we wait for the vice president's phone call, there's one introduction that I want to make, and I want to make sure that everyone realizes that he's here. I have to the left of me the Congressman Guy Molinari, the chairman of the Bush campaign for New York State, who will be taking the call from the vice president. I'd like to say a few words of welcome to everyone here. So, Congressman Molinari. Vice President spent the day in Pennsylvania today, and just before I left Washington tonight, I spoke with some of my colleagues, and we had a great day, as he did last week, 3 days in New York. We're all assembled here tonight. We don't have the air of excitement that our colleagues have. I flew in tonight with some of my Democratic friends who are on opposite sides of whatever camp, and they were all kind of suffering from anxiety pains. We don't have that, but what we do have is a candidate and a party united. We have the candidate. I feel very confident that we have a professional team who showed that throughout the country. The Bush organization has been well organized. We've been at it now for almost a year and a half. I think we proved that in New Hampshire when the chips were down. And now we look forward to a good, tough battle. We have the troops spread out in the state. We have more volunteers that want to work, and they keep calling and calling and calling. And I say, folks, just stand by a bit with us. We're about to get into the main goal. But at this point, I want to thank you all. I know some of you folks have been at our headquarters here in Manhattan time after time, night after night. It paid off. We're delighted. Our candidate really is with it the last couple of weeks. I can see the enthusiasm building up. The 3 days he spent in New York, the man really now a step away from the presidency. I think that he's going to win. I think he's going to win big. I don't mean to suggest in any way that we're overconfident. We can't do that. The Democrats will get their act together, but we have the record. We have a vice president who has a superb record. We're going to run on that record, the Reagan Bush record. The last 8 years, and that's a record that anybody could be proud of. So,
here.
to joining with you all as we prepare for the general election and welcome you. And Rush Reefer, of course, this man has done a fantastic job for us as our state director. Joe Diamond and Bruce Feld and the rest of you. I don't want to start mentioning people because I'll get in trouble. But I thank you all and look forward to a race. If anybody out there with the media has any questions, we'd be glad to answer them. Otherwise, we'll wait for the phone call.
Thank you.
Huh?
Yep.
Hello, Peter. Mr. Vice President, can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Guy.
Yeah. We have a very enthusiastic crowd here, as you can hear.
Well, listen, I just called in to thank you and everybody else for this hard work up there, and I hope we have something to celebrate. Have you got any... Yeah, it's silly, isn't it, get any returns on how I get and all of that.
Well, we don't have any returns yet, but I think that it's safe to say that you're going to sweep the state and almost unite. The big question that was asked of me when I got here tonight, Mr. Vice President, was, did you really throw a strike at the opening of the Mets game the other day, and don't I deserve some credit since I warmed you up in Air Force Two?
The answer to your question is yes, and the answer to the second question is no. He's still out on the pitch. Gary Carter is back out from the clinic, and his hand, though bruised from the fastball, is recovering. That was a good day out there, but I'll let you all go, but I wanted to just call you, and though we ended up not in the hotly contested fight, I thought every first part, and I'll tell you what, I think a great football, I think whoever did gun to try to get his focus, McGrath.
We're having some technical difficulties here, we're not able to read you very well.
Well, I'm not saying a hell of a lot either.
Could you share with us, if you will, we have quite a few members of the press here, could you share with us your feeling as to the future in the general election?
Well, what I was affecting to say is that as I look at what's happening on the Democratic side, it's me that we have not really done yet to run against the Democrat, and as soon as they have their nominee, I'll be at it, and others can take message, but I think it's a very good place for the voters.
Well, I didn't hear that, but I think what you were saying in somewhat garbled English is that you're not considering Guy Molinari for vice president.
It was a phone bill, then it would come through loud and clear.
Well, we thank you very much for your call. We all love you. We look forward to working alongside of you. You preach loyalty, Mr. Vice President. You practice loyalty, and you're about to see loyalty come back to your favor.
Fantastic, and thank you all, and good night, and we'll be see you all soon.
Are you still there, by any chance?
No.
Sorry,
no problem, no worries.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have our state chairman who just walked in, and unfortunately I didn't have the presence of mind to have him speak while the vice president was here, but while I have your attention, please, Tony Calavia, our great state chairman.
We don't need a microphone, huh? There's something about following the next president of the United States makes me a little uncomfortable. But I just want to say, I understand from Russ, it was a great victory. I'm sorry I was late. I'm sorry I wasn't able to say hello, but I'm glad I'm able to say hello to each and every one of you.
thank you for all you've done. It's going to be a great Republican year in New York State. God bless you. And I have a dignitary here with me that that we must hear from. The minority leader of the city council, our only Republican elected official in the city of New York representing city government, Susan Molinaro.
I just want to ask one question. Do you hear that noise outside? It sounds a little bit like cheering from Democratic headquarters in New York, and I want you to listen very carefully. This is the last time the Democrats in the city of New York and in the United States are going to be celebrating this election year. They're going to have one day, and it's over. Because, ladies and gentlemen, we just heard from one of the finest gentlemen to lead this country and our next president, and the Democrats should enjoy their evening because from now on, Democratic headquarters will be a very unhappy place to be in the city of New York, in the state of New York, and in the nation. Keep up the great work because not even George Bush can do it without each and every one of you ringing doorbells and getting out there to vote. Thank you for helping my dad.
And there you have it. The scene at Republican headquarters after the primary on Tuesday with a fouled-up phone system, which was incredible, absolutely incredible. And, of course, Susan Molinari, the minority leader for the city council. And now we'd like to hear from you at 632-6901, your impressions of George Bush, Mike Dukakis, Jesse Jackson, all those fun people, and where the whole election scene stands. It's 3 minutes after 11 o'clock. The program is Brain Damage, and we're on the air until midnight. I'm Eric Corley, and we will be looking at a couple other articles as well. And Newsday, New York Times, Village Voice, that kind of thing. But first, let's go to the phones and give out the number one more time. It's 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Yes, you're talking a good deal about candidates that everybody knows, and that, of course, is interesting. But I think maybe what's more important is what's happening down among the campaigns and among the people working on campaigns. And maybe the major contribution that Jackson will make is to reverse declining turnout, for example.
Uh-huh. Well, he certainly did that in New York City.
I think he's doing that all over the country. Traditionally, it's been the poor and minority and uneducated who don't vote, though they have the most to gain. But certainly there's been a surge of black voter registration. I've been involved in the Jackson campaign, and the voter registration forms just pile up from people. And lots of black citizens have developed a great degree of political sophistication. And in getting Jackson on the ballot and trying to elect delegates for him.
I think people see in Jesse Jackson a real chance for change. And the reason poor people and minorities don't vote usually is because they don't think it'll do any good. But with someone like Jackson, and when you see the campaign moving ahead and delegates being gained and chances being increased, it really provides hope, which is perhaps the first time hope has been seen by these people.
Well, people don't vote because they think it won't help, but also because they don't quite know how to get involved in the process, which is fairly arcane and fairly mysterious, you know.
Uh-huh.
There are barriers to involvement, not accidentally, one suspects, but...
What kind of barriers do you see?
Well, getting registered, knowing where to go to vote, getting on the ballot, avoiding all the little nitpicking problems that can be used to throw somebody off the ballot, learning how to get out to vote, learning how to raise funds, learning to build coalitions. And this has been really very widespread throughout the country because of Jackson's campaign. Just to talk about the 1st Congressional District of New York where I live, this is a district that 2 years ago was represented in Congress by the only member of the Conservative Party to serve in the House of Representatives. And in the primary, had voted 25% for Jackson.
Uh-huh.
And elected a Jackson delegate. And that's a remarkable change, and many people were involved in making that come about, and they're not going to lose that ability and that knowledge.
Uh-huh. That
really sort of democratizes the Democratic Party considerably.
So even if Jackson loses, he has somehow brought this to the people, this knowledge, this way of doing things, and in the future. Do you think they'll be as involved in the future?
I think obviously they will be, and obviously Jackson is going to play a major role in Democratic Party politics for the rest of the century. As candidates go, he's a young man, and he's now a remarkably sophisticated candidate. It would be interesting to have tapes of his campaigning 4 years ago and compare them to today. He's really a formidable debater. There's a lot of talk about Reagan being a great communicator. Jackson is a really great communicator.
Oh, certainly. A lot of people have admitted to that. I think even George Bush has said that at one point.
He's very much up on the issues. And another thing we see in Suffolk County, where Democrats have an uphill battle, they usually lose the first time they run for office. Hawk Bruckner did, Halpin did, any number of people did, but they learn their way around, learn the ropes, and pick up the various techniques, and they come back and win. So that Jackson is really a very charismatic candidate, and regardless of whether he's on the ticket, I think if he's not on the ticket, he'll be in the cabinet.
Uh-huh.
Simply going to play a very important role, and he's going to be a role model for all sorts of other minority candidates or female candidates.
Uh-huh.
Say, golly, if this guy can do it, I can do it. And I'm watching him, and I'm going to do the same thing.
That's very important, because that's what it's all about. It's not how much money you have, which is what it's been over the last few years, as far as I can see, but he has come up from the bottom and deserves a lot of credit for that, no matter whose side you're on. I'd like to ask you something, if perhaps you know, if anyone has ever tallied the actual popular vote by now. How many popular votes has Dukakis gotten versus Jackson, not delegate votes? Is that even kept track of?
It is kept track of, but it's a pretty hopeless task, because all the state laws are different, and very often people cast a popular vote for a delegate to go to a county convention, who goes to a state convention, who votes for delegates, and sometimes there's a month between those events, and so it's, you know, it's very difficult to be exact about it.
Uh-huh. Because I heard at one point a few weeks ago that Jesse Jackson had more popular votes than Dukakis, and that just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I mean, if someone has more popular votes, it seems like they should be the ones ahead. It's kind of similar to the Electoral College nonsense we go through every election.
Well, in all honesty, it's a little different in that you say Jackson has more popular votes than Dukakis, but since in most primaries there have been four or five or six candidates, that means that Jackson has maybe 28% to somebody's 26%, and he's the leader, but that doesn't exactly entitle you to the nomination.
Uh-huh. Do you think a Dukakis-Jackson ticket would be feasible? Do you think it could win?
I really don't think so. I'm sorry to say that I would prefer a Jackson-Dukakis ticket myself, but the problem is that the Democrats really have to carry a number of southern states, and if they run what is, in effect, two northern liberals, why, that's a very big handicap to overcome. We forget the extent to which the Reagan administration has built up the Sun Belt. That's where the big arms contracts are, in Texas, in Southern California, and Florida. That's where the big Army and Navy bases are. As a matter of fact, one can make the argument that much of the military spending in the Reagan years was not really related to the national defense, probably didn't contribute to it, maybe made us less safe, but was building up the areas where Reagan was widely supported. So now that's out there, and there are all sorts of people who are working at naval bases or air bases or army bases or retired military people or defense contractors, and to get them to vote Democrat is going to take a lot of calculation.
Uh-huh. Well, it should be interesting when the final stretch is underway. We could have a very exciting election. I know, as I've said before, this is probably the most exciting election I've seen in many years, and perhaps something good will come out of it. Who knows?
Let's hope.
Yeah. Thanks very much for calling, then.
Hey.
Good night. 632-6901 is our phone number. That's area code 516. We'd love to hear your comments, your views, and opinions, and projections, and all kinds of other things. And, in fact, you can even change the subject if you want to. I mean, you know, we don't tie people into a particular subject on this program. We kind of let it go all over the place, just the nature of things. Interesting in article in the Village Voice press clips section this week called Embracing Arafat. It's not actually an article, it's just a couple of paragraphs written by Jeffrey Stokes. I know the primary will be over by the time you read this, though not alas when I write it, but a letter from George Spitz, running as a Jackson delegate from the East Side, sent me back to look at the clips of Jackson's 1979 quote-unquote embrace of Arafat. In general, since virtually all Jackson's public statements involved his hopes of convincing the PLO to recognize Israel's continuing right to exist, the meetings were hardly an immediate success, but neither were they the sort of love feast they have become, aided by Ed Koch, among others, in retrospect. In this regard, it's especially interesting to look at an AP report from Beirut on October 6th, the day after Jackson returned to the U.S. In talks here with Yasser Arafat, head of the PLO, and other Palestinian officials, Mr. Jackson called on the PLO to renounce violence and rely instead on diplomatic means to achieve its goal of a Palestinian state. October 6th. So that was in 1979. Almost 10 years ago. That's when this happened. Almost 10 years ago. And again, he called on the PLO to renounce violence and rely instead on diplomatic means to achieve its goal of a Palestinian state. Hardly seems like embracing to me. Abdel Jawad Saleh of the PLO's executive committee was quoted in Beirut newspapers as having charged that Mr. Jackson had sought to split the Arab and Palestinian ranks by demanding a freeze in the Palestinian armed struggle, recognition of Israel, and participation in the Camp David Accords. This is, as it happens, almost exactly what Jackson has been saying, he said, during the famous meetings. That his campaign seemed unable to convince many concerned New Yorkers about it is the campaign's fault. That the press let the charges of embracing Arafat go largely unexamined is its fault. So, whenever you have doubts about something that a candidate has said, by all means, go to the library and take out the microfilm machine and go back and look at the newspapers back then. It's the most amazing thing. You'll see what actually happened. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage. Hello. Hello. Is there anybody there? Shy people calling tonight. 632-6901. Again, 632-6901, area code 516. Now, there are quite a few people thinking that that Dukakis and Jackson are up to something. And as far as running together, there was a rather large article in the New York Times today about that. Entitled Dukakis and Jackson on Agreeable Terms in Debate. Let's take this on-campus call first. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Yeah, I have a question kind of about Dukakis and Jackson. Now, say, for example, that Dukakis wins the nomination, what do you think the chances of him having Jackson as his running mate are? And if he did, what do you think? How do you think the whole Democratic Party would react to that?
Well, that's pretty much the question we're asking here, is what are the chances Based on what's been happening the last couple of days, it seems like they're up to something. It seems like these people may very well end up as running mates, although what they could be doing instead is just simply agreeing to agree so that the Democratic Party will be strengthened and it won't seem like there are factions. Because if the number of people that voted for Jackson stay away from the polls or vote for Jackson and even though he's not running, or vote for Bush or vote for anybody else, they'll lose the election for sure, no question about it. The votes that Jackson has are very powerful, and those votes could make or break the election.
But would you say that, say Jackson was chosen as a vice presidential running mate to the caucus, would you say that the people who voted for Jackson for president would see this as just the Democratic Party's acquisition to Jackson's popular, yes, but they don't want him to be president, so he'll be vice president, and then change their votes over to the Republican candidate?
Why would they change their votes over?
It just seems like they would just see that as the Democratic Party just kind of using Jackson for his votes, but not really seeing him as a viable candidate.
Well,
so he's vice president instead of president. So what they're saying is, okay, we'll make him vice president, but, you know, not president.
Well, now, when you're vice president, to coin a phrase, you're one heartbeat away from the presidency. And I don't think it's something that they would just throw someone to keep them happy. They would not allow somebody to be a vice presidential candidate if they did not feel that he could make a decent president if the matters called for it.
Yeah, okay, well, great. That answers my question pretty much. Hey, listen, Eric, you sound really good. You're having a great show. I like it a lot.
I like to think so. But, again, that's up to the listeners. If we get more calls from listeners giving their replies, responses, and feelings, we'll have a tremendous show. In fact, there'll be headlines in the newspaper tomorrow about this tremendous show that emanates from Stony Brook.
All right, well, thanks a lot, Eric.
Okay, thanks for calling. 632-6901, area code 516. That is our phone number, and if you do get through, allow the phone to ring so that we can get to you after we talk to the people we're talking to. Good evening. You are on Brain Damage.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm calling. Like, I want to make a statement about the disaffection of candidacy.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Wendez.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, like, I'm a Democrat. And I voted all the Democratic ticket all the time. And when Jesse Jackson has pulled the unity of the Democratic ticket, put it together with a Dukakis. Now, Dukakis, he don't know what he's talking about because he's a Greek man. You have to know what's going on in America. So right now, you have to be of the black persuasion because of all the problems that is arising out of the homelessness and the pitifulness of the country in the condition it is. As of now, in this point in time, everybody should vote for Jesse Jackson because everybody else is voting for Jesse Jackson, and they'll vote for him twice or even more because that's the way the democratic process works. Majority of the minority always rules.
Well, now, it's not really that easy to vote more than once, is it? Although I've heard cases where it is possible to vote more than once, but you shouldn't do that. I don't think we should be promoting that on the airwaves.
Well, yeah, it's a democracy, and you can say what you want.
Well, yeah, well, what I want to say is that the democratic process means the more people that vote for somebody, the majority rules, but one vote per person is the way it really should be.
Well, that's okay. I'll concede to that.
If we all agree to that, I think we'll get along fine, you know?
No problem. I'll make one more statement?
Sure.
I'd like to say that I don't think Tawana is lying.
Uh-huh.
I don't think she's lying. I think she's telling the truth. The hunk is. They got her.
Well, now, there is... I read the Village Voice last night on the way home on the train because I couldn't get a copy of the New York Times, so I read the Village Voice instead. And there's this whole big article in there about Tawana Brawley. It's called Who's Afraid of Tawana Brawley? And it's kind of sick the way people in the town are reacting to what's going on up there. They just all naturally assume that she's lying. And, I mean, even if she is lying, the hostile way that they're acting is kind of inappropriate, I think. Rather, kind of a silence, I think, would be more appropriate than coming out with headlines in the local newspapers saying $25 for anyone who can top Tawana Brawley with a lie, you know, a headline on the front page of the newspaper.
I agree with you with the silence. Silence but deadly. That's what they used to say.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Thanks very much for calling.
You're welcome.
632-6901 is our phone number, area code 516. Folks in Connecticut, we'd like to hear from you. You know, you had a primary a few weeks ago, and the caucus won over there as well. Debating one-on-one for the first time, Governor Michael S. Dukakis of Massachusetts and the Reverend Jesse Jackson demonstrated last night that the tone of their competition for the Democratic presidential nomination would be that of a respectful rivalry, not a contentious struggle. The two remaining contenders for the nomination joked and nudged each other throughout the session, agreeing on a wide range of domestic and international issues and disagreeing only in nuance. The mood was aptly summed up by Mr. Jackson in his closing statement. Among us, he said, there are distinctions, but not divisions. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage. Hello? Well, you see, now, this is probably our fault because we do say give us a call, 632-6901. But I keep forgetting where we are. We do have to point out certain things here. Give a call and then speak when we pick up the phone. That's how it works. Then we hear you. We sometimes speak back, and conversations come of it occasionally. And think of this. When you talk to us and we talk back to you and it goes on for a little while, more people, even more people at home, listen. And if there's two people together, one person will say something as a sort of comment to what they've heard on the radio. Then another person will respond to that. And then the third person will respond again, walk out of the house, slam the door, and go someplace else and talk to someone else about it. And then they'll make a phone call, and before you know it, you're moving the whole nation into something. So make that call, 632-6901, area code 516. Wow, that was a pitch. I lit up the switchboard with that one. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage. Okay, that one's gone. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hello?
Yes?
I'm calling about the previous caller, the colored man, who called about the Jesse Jackson recent victories in New York State.
Okay.
And I for one, as someone who lives out on Fire Island, would vote for Mr. Jackson ineruptively, because Mr. Jackson has unified the Democratic Party for each and every one who is in the party of all different ethnic groups and persuasions.
He's unified them, you say?
He's unified them like crazy glue to that man's hat that hangs from the steel girder.
Yes, I've heard that analogy before. Well, now, do you think a Dukakis-Jackson running team is feasible?
It's possible.
That's possible, but not feasible.
It's feasible, it's possible, it's plausible, it may not come to be.
Ah.
That has very little to do with the theory of Jacksonism.
Uh-huh. What do they call people? Jacksonites?
Jackass? I'm not sure.
Jacksonians, perhaps.
Jacksonians.
Well.
Jackson is the lead, Dukakis, as Mr. Nixon, who, if anybody will take his opinion, says he's a word processor. I think he's right.
He did say that, didn't he? He called Dukakis a word processor. What did he called somebody else something else before that, to create an analogy of the word process. But I thought that was a good quote there from Nixon. He can still come up with a good comment now and then.
Yes, he can. Well, he's retired. He has a lot of time.
That's true. He just sort of sits around and thinks up things to say. But occasionally he lets out a good one, you know?
Well, that's...
Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Yeah, good evening. I was curious as what you think about Jackson as a candidate, because... it's to my understanding that he's never really held a public office.
Well, you know, I think there obviously is a disadvantage to not holding public office, but in another way there is an advantage to not being a part of the system, to having fresh ideas instilled into the whole thing. Jackson is a leader. He's not an elected leader, although in a way he is, because the people have chosen him. There's no question about that, but he has not been elected into the actual government. But once he is elected into the government, which he certainly has proven he can be, then he becomes an elected official. And I think if he ran against Mayor Koch next year, he would win. And then he would fulfill that requirement. So he's not that far away from that.
I mean, yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, some of his social ideas for the country are, you know, excellent, no doubt. But, you know, I would feel a lot more comfortable if he was some sort of governor or at least a senator of some sort before, I think he would have even had a better chance of running. You know, he's well in the race still, but, you know, I view as the Democratic Party getting so fed up with what's been going on that, you know, they might just go and vote Republican, and Bush may win by a landslide. You know, I think that's completely conceivable.
Well, do you think they would vote Republican or just stay home?
That, too. There might be a lot of abstentions.
I can't imagine a true Democrat going out and voting Republican just to spite someone, you know?
Well, I think it's just a matter of frustration. I know, you know, I would feel very, I'm not a Democrat myself, but I would feel very, you know, frustrated, you know, what has been going on.
Uh-huh.
I think it's good that the third candidate did drop out. You know, I think it eased up the race a little.
Well, no, they drop out, but they don't really drop out. They say they're suspending their campaign. I don't understand why. Someone told me because Jackson would get more delegates if they did. I don't know if that's really true, but that's a,
I don't think so.
It's a horrible reason if it is.
Yeah.
But if they're going to drop out, I wish they would drop out. I mean, why suspend their campaign and not going to come back?
Yeah.
It's obviously some kind of loophole for something.
Hmm.
So, all right, what part of the country are you calling from?
I'm right from campus.
Oh, good. Well, that's good that people on campus...
see you frequently. I enjoy your program.
Well, thanks very much.
Yeah.
Okay, take care then.
So long. Have a good night.
You too. 632-6901, that is our telephone number. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Yes, this is my take on the Jackson campaign.
Your what?
My take.
Okay, go ahead.
I have a scheme.
You have a scheme, okay. Well, I wish there was more to that, but I guess we have to be thankful for what we get. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage. Hello. What's going on here tonight? Is everyone suddenly getting stage fright? Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hey, man.
Hey, man, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm calling up. I was listening to the last couple of guys you got on the radio, the Democrats. You know, and I ain't a Democrat.
Okay, what are you then?
I'm sort of like a Republican.
Sort of like a Republican? I mean, you can say you're a Republican. I won't hang up on you or anything if you say
I
that.
I just don't vote Democrat, but I'm not sure if I'm a Republican.
Uh-huh.
You've got all Democrats calling you up, you know, and it seems like none of them can talk straight. They're all, like, talking,
Well, now, I don't think they're saying they're Democrats. Yeah, I think you're assuming they're Democrats.
Well, they're voting Democrat. That's being a Democrat.
Well, you know...
Republicans vote Democrat.
You see, I don't want to call...
Republican and not a Democrat. I ain't voting a Democrat.
I don't want to call myself a Democrat. I don't want to call myself a Republican. I just want to do whatever I feel is right at the moment.
Well, who are you going to vote for? Pat Paulson?
Well, I could, but I don't think I will.
He's running this year.
Is he? Well, that's lovely, but... I just like to make decisions based on what I feel is right at the moment, and I don't think I should be denied the access to deciding who's going to run simply because I feel that way. I think everyone should feel that way.
Yeah, yeah. Joan Baez said the same thing back in 69, and she's a lesbo.
Well, she says something nice now and then, and I don't know if she's a lesbian. That's never been documented.
Stole my girl, man.
Uh-huh. Well, do you have any thoughts on this matter?
No, that's not what we call about. I'm calling about the Democrats.
Okay.
The Democrats. Most of the Democrats, you know where they live. They live out of Cherry Grove.
What's the Fire Island references tonight?
The who?
The second person that called mentioning Fire Island.
Well, that's where they live, all the Democrats.
All the Democrats live in Fire Island?
They do their hair and stuff. And the rest of the Democrats, they live in Dix Hills.
Dix Hills?
Dix Hills. It's over here. No one over in Dix Hills. You know, no one in Dix Hills cuts their own lawn. I know. I got an uncle in Dix Hills. He don't cut his own lawn.
Where are you calling from now?
I'm over in Holtsville.
Holtsville? That's,
Named after Elizabeth Holtzman.
Yeah, right. Well, I don't know what to ask this person at all. is there anything you'd like to add to all of this?
I don't know. I was listening to the other guy, you know, and I think Tawana is lying.
You do?
Damn right.
Okay, well, I'll log that. I'll make sure that we have your vote on that.
Listen to your show all the time. Take it easy, man.
Okay, take care. 632-6901. Whether you're crazy, whether you're sane, give us a call here at 90.1 FM. But first, listen to this. We'll be right back. okay. I have to admit I made a mistake here. I thought I was playing a Blues Show promo, but instead I was playing the Blues Show theme. Terribly sorry about this, folks. But the Blues Show can be heard on Tuesday nights. Yes, Tuesday nights at either 6:30 or 7. Hold on, I'm trying to find that out right now, even as I speak. But they got a really nice theme, you know, and you can hear it at the beginning of their show. And they have a different theme, I believe, at the end of the show, which is good as well. Boy, we have a lot of programs. I'm thumbing through them all, and I can't find the Blues Show. The Oldie Show, Taking Care of Yourself, Power Surge, India Hour, Common Ground, Concert Billboard, Stardate. Well, it's on Tuesday nights, so make sure you tune in Tuesday evening, 6:30 or 7 o'clock, and you'll hear the blues program. Fine blues music, yes. Here on 90.1 FM. Maybe next week we'll have a blues promo for you. In any event, let's get back to matters at hand. Jesse Jackson, Michael Dukakis, what are your thoughts on the matter? What are your thoughts on presidential politics in general, or anything in particular? Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hello, man.
Oh, boy. Is this the same person?
Excuse me?
Is this the same person that called before?
No, is the Blue Show on, man?
No, the Blue Show is not on now. We were playing the intro to the Blue Show, and I guess that might have triggered a few people to act like the Blue Show was actually on, but it's not.
I listen to the Blue Show all the time.
Well, then you can tell us what time it begins.
It begins in the beginning.
Yes, I thought so. Well, the Blue Show is on Tuesday evenings, and it lasts for about 2 hours. So it's either 6:30 to 8:30 or 7 to 9, one of those two. But we always change things here at the station. That's why I can never keep up.
That's what I'm telling you, man.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
I'm on from 10 to 12 on Saturday nights. It's easy to remember. No problem there.
I turn it off at 10.
Then you're not listening to the radio now, are you?
No, I'm looking for the Blue Show.
Oh, well, you won't find it here. I mean, all I did was play the Blue Show by accident. I thought I was playing a promo. But if you turn off your radio and set the dial or set the clock or whatever you set to Tuesday night, you'll hear lots of blues music. And, you know, you can even call up and request blues songs.
Good, man.
And they play them sometimes, too.
Yeah. Okay. Good night, man.
Good night. I'm sorry if I've disappointed anyone by playing that. I know people have special radios that turn themselves on when the blues starts coming over, but that was my mistake, and I'm sorry about it. If you want to talk about the politics of race or the race of politics or anything else going on, current events, give us a call, 632-6901. We've got about 20-25 more minutes to deal with all of this. Today's Newsday says Jackson won't be number two if it hurts the party. One of the Reverend Jesse Jackson's senior advisors said yesterday that he thought Jackson would not take the vice presidential nomination if it seemed likely he would hurt the prospects for a Democratic victory in November. "We've got a saying, long-term gain, short-term pain," said Burt Lance, a former top aide to President Jimmy Carter who has become a Jackson confidant. "If I were advising a political candidate in that regard, I'd advise him to take the long view of his future as a leader in the party." Lance's comments at a breakfast with reporters and in a brief interview afterward came amid conflicting signals on the subject of the vice presidency from the Jackson camp, with campaign manager Gerald Austin and chairman Willie Brown telling reporters this week that Jackson had earned the right to be offered the second spot on the ticket if Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis, the front runner, wins the nomination. But Jackson himself said earlier this month, whoever is the nominee ought to have the option to choose who the vice president should be. Lance said the 46-year-old candidate already had demonstrated a willingness to sublimate his own personal interest to see a Democrat elected in November. "If he was 70 years old, you might say one thing, but because of his age and because of his future, I think you have to very carefully take into consideration what impact any decision has about his future," Lance said. "And if it came down to a negative circumstance, I think he'd respond appropriately." Lance said he would advise Jackson to announce his intentions on the morning of June 8th. An important day, June 8th, the day after the closing California primary, to avoid weeks of behind-the-scenes jockeying before the national convention in July. Some Democratic strategists who do not want to see Jackson on the ticket have suggested that the civil rights leader risks being made the scapegoat if he is nominated for vice president and the party loses. A USA Today poll published yesterday showed Dukakis beating Vice President George Bush, the likely Republican nominee, 45% to 43%. Oh, that's news to me. But when Jackson was listed as a Democratic running mate, Bush won 49% to 42%. So what's all this about Jackson hurting the party? And again, we come up with the same crazy sentence I never understand. The survey of 900 voters nationwide had a margin of error of 3.3%. I don't know what they mean by that. If anyone knows, please call us. The same survey 2 weeks ago showed Dukakis beating Bush with or without Jackson. And I believe this one did the exact same thing. Lance said that, Bert Lance, it is said in his native South, it obviously still is a problem that some swing white voters, and they're not swingers, so don't call them that, they would not vote for a ticket that included a black. And I hate it when they say that. I hate it when newspapers refer to people as a black. A black what? It's a black man, a person with black skin. But don't call them a black. I think that's so insulting. I mean, I haven't been called a white in a long time. And I prefer not to be. The fact that people will make a decision based on race is still out there, he said, and unfortunately he is right there. 632-6901, area code 516. Please give us a call, and especially if you're not nuts tonight, give us a call. 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage. Boy, how did they do that? They made the light go out on the phone. The phone was flashing, I pushed it, and it just went out. Some electronic banditry going on tonight. Please give us a call, 632-6901. And, here's a call here, and I don't know what to do with it, but I'm going to try to answer this one. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Yes, I'm calling about the 3.3%.
Why is it everyone tonight has an accent? Well, never mind, go ahead.
Okay, I am calling, I am at the Mayo Institute, and the 3.3...
The error margin you're talking about.
The error margin has to do with a variable of how many people would be correct if people made the correct decisions. Like, if 100% possible, there is never 100% possible when you're dealing with people as a whole.
Nothing is 100% possible when you're dealing with people.
No, the thing is, yes or no, but there will always be people who say, I don't know.
The people who don't make up their minds.
Yes, I have not decided.
Uh-huh.
And these people are the people who lance up the equation. And the equation being, of three people, if two people make a decision, the third people will not make a decision, and the other two people...
Well, no, I think that's a hell of a lot more than 3.3% of the people that mess up things by not deciding. I think that's more like 30%.
Most people are procrastinators.
Uh-huh. Oh, I'll give you that. Yes, most people are procrastinators, yes.
I would like to tell you more about this, but I'd like to tell you tomorrow.
You're procrastinating, I see.
See what I mean?
Yes.
It's an example of everybody is procrastinating.
Uh-huh.
And that is their 3.3 people who, they do not impede, they are a stabilizing effect on society.
Society, right. Well, now, do you know any people like this, 3.3% procrastination factor?
Maybe some people, maybe not. Yes or no.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure.
Maybe you could get back to me on it.
I could.
Okay. Well, that would be nice.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good evening. I'm going crazy. I said good evening, and I didn't even pick up the phone. Good evening. You're not on the air because I didn't pick up the phone here, but I am giving out the phone number, 632-6901, area code 516. We are taking phone calls up until midnight or about 5 to midnight, which is when we usually start on our goodbyes. And sometimes the goodbyes get kind of emotional and we just keep going for a while and there's like long scenes at the doorway and that kind of thing. So give us a call now and that way you will ensure that that you get through. The strangest part about primary coverage, other than the Daily News delighting the Dukakis camp with its too close to call Sunday headline, this is from the Village Voice, by the way, has been watching the attempts of national political correspondents, some of them New Yorkers, to explain why New York is not Iowa. the general consensus, Gotham is a geek show. The Washington Post even did an editorial to this effect. The best local entry in this sweepstakes was Michael Oreskes' Times Memo. The best national effort was John Aloysius Farrell's Boston Globe piece on New York as an episode of Dallas. For sheer ebullience of style, Farrell's been hard to top this year. Indeed, the whole Globe team has been getting better and better. See its Sunday business piece on New York Labor, for instance. Best media on the media, Lloyd Grove in last week's Washington Post style section. Most condescending single remark, the New Yorker's Elizabeth Drew commenting on New York's Jewish voters on Inside Washington. They're just like people, she said. Best weirdness capsule, David Rogers in the Wall Street Journal. Mayor Koch says politics here is only a matter of standing toe to toe, head to head. Of course, Mr. Koch is also the man who once proposed using wolves to guard the city's subway rail yards from vandals. I remember that. I remember that. Mayor Koch has said some wild things in his time. Wild things. Perhaps the man is losing his mind. Wouldn't that be interesting to have a mayor that goes bananas? Oh, you never know what's going to happen in New York. It's a hell of a town. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi.
Hi.
About the campaigns and everything.
Yes?
You know what I feel is really wrong with it?
What's that?
Everybody knows who is winning all the time and, you know, who's ahead in the polls, but nobody really knows what the issues are, or they don't even really seem to care. They just care who's black or white or whatever.
Well, numbers, yeah, people like numbers. You know, it's kind of like a sporting contest then. But you're right, the issues are barely addressed at all. It was interesting this last Tuesday, though, there seemed to have been some kind of an agreement with the networks not to give out too many numbers before 9 o'clock when the polls closed.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I had seen this actually happen. I don't know if it changed things significantly. I still didn't see very many issues being addressed. But who knows? Perhaps it's a start.
I have to admit, I don't really know as much as I'd like to know about the whole campaign.
Uh-huh.
I support Dukakis because actually, not because he's outstanding, I just don't want Bush in the office.
Uh-huh. I wonder how many people support a candidate because they dislike another candidate. You know, I wonder how many people voted for Dukakis because they didn't want to see Jackson get it. I wonder how many people voted for Jackson because they didn't like Bush. And I don't know why anybody would even bother voting for Bush at this stage in the game. It doesn't really matter. I mean, what would happen if nobody voted for Bush? He's already won, you know? He hasn't already won, but no one else is really challenging him. Everyone else has dropped out. So I don't know it would be interesting if he didn't get any delegates newer than anybody else, and they just somehow couldn't have a candidate this year. But I guess that's just wishful thinking on my part.
Yeah.
Do you think a Dukakis-Jackson ticket is possible, or do you think it would win? According to what I just read here, a Dukakis-Jackson ticket would be very successful, more successful than Dukakis without Jackson.
I think they'd have a good chance of winning Dukakis-Jackson ticket. Why not? It seems they both deserve it. They're both ahead in the polls, even though
mean
much. But
do you think Jackson is anti-Semitic?
Well, he seems to be sometimes. I don't know. That's what scares me a little bit, though. He does seem to change his mind a lot, and he's not really reliable, it doesn't seem.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Well, you know, it's a tough thing when you're running for an office. The slightest thing you say can be magnified, misinterpreted, and thrown back at you in so many different ways. You have to be careful how you say everything.
Yeah, that
now,
scares me.
Tonight,
I'm going into politics tonight.
You're going into politics?
And I had a warrant out for my arrest for a parking ticket.
Uh-oh.
I know that's going to come out and haunt me someday.
That'll come up in the congressional hearing somewhere.
About the parking ticket part, you know, when I'm running for president someday.
Yeah, no, that'll come up. That'll definitely come up. But we have George Bush tonight on our radio station saying, quote, "I really wasn't saying a hell of a lot," you know, and I think that could come back to haunt him at some point, especially if we leaked that to somebody. I don't know if you were listening, but we were playing George Bush back on a defective speakerphone, and nobody could hear him at Republican headquarters, and when they told him that they couldn't hear him, he was saying, "Well, that's okay, I really didn't say a hell of a lot anyway." But taken out of context, that quote could be completely different, you know?
Yeah.
So, When you're running for something, but I don't think he has to worry about anything. He can probably act like a real fool now, and nothing will really happen to him. He'll still be the Republican nominee. Whether he'll win the election, that's something else.
Well, that's what Reagan did. Look where he is.
Yeah, but everyone loves Reagan.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean.
Actually, you know, I haven't heard much from Reagan recently. What's he up to? No one seems to care about him anymore.
I don't know. Well, they don't. They're overriding his vetoes, and he's out of there, really.
Yeah, but still, man, the guy, you know, he's got how many more months? This is what, April?
Yeah.
He's got a good 6 months at least. Well, he's got until next January. So he still could start a few more wars, whatever it is he wants to do in those.
I wouldn't doubt it, but I don't really think he starts them. He's sort of, couldn't you just sort of picture him playing jacks before the, I know it sounds weird, before the camera's on him, he's sitting and playing jacks, he's going, oh, I'm on twosies, and then they take him out of his hand and they set him up with a speech in front of him. Okay, but anyway.
One thing you have to say about Jackson, though, and this I believe is true from what I've heard, he writes his own material.
Does he?
And, I mean, I'm sure he gets advised on what he says, but when he speaks, I mean, there's passion in there, and you can't get that from someone else. You have to have that yourself. And from what I understand, his words are his own. And I just can't. I always thought that was the way it was. I always thought that a presidential candidate or a president speaking to us was saying something from himself, not from someone else.
Oh.
It seems so phony this way.
Well, that I respect that about Jackson. It's when I'm running a presidential campaign, I hope I'll be that way. I have to admit, I have been rooting for Jackson a little bit because...
Did you just say when you run a presidential campaign?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, that's good. Tell when you do run a presidential campaign, give us a call back and tell us that you called us. Remind us of that because, you know, it would give us kind of a thrill here.
All right. I'll
I mean,
mind.
You don't even have...
Maybe you're taping me or something.
You don't even have to win, you know. It's just the idea of running.
Well, if I run, I'll win.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good. It's good to have that attitude.
Yeah.
I think if more people had that attitude, well, it would be more interesting.
I'm not sure if I should run, though, or just maybe become a...
I'll tell you what I can't understand, though, are these people like Al Gore and Robertson, who are obviously defeated, but they refuse to admit it. They say, well, you know, it's not over till it's over. I still have a chance, and I refuse to give in. I think things will turn around. And you have to wonder, what kind of a president would that make? Somebody who obviously cannot see reality or who refuses to admit to reality. I mean, the person is either very stupid or they're lying. And that's not an admirable trait for a president to have.
I guess we can go to Reagan for that example also. But anyway.
Yeah, except he did win.
Yeah, that's scary. But, I don't know, I guess that's all I have to say.
Okay, well, thanks very much for calling.
All right, bye.
632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Good evening. I wanted to clarify this thing about the 3% margin for you and your listeners.
Okay, I appreciate that. 3.3%
margin of error.
Margin of error.
Around the percentage that they're estimating. And what that means is, say you wanted to find out what proportion of Stony Brook students were males and what proportion were females.
Uh-huh.
If you went out and sampled only 10 or 15 people, you'd have a very bad estimate of that.
Uh-huh.
So there'd be wide margins of error on your estimate.
How would you know what the margin of error was, though?
Well, there are statistical formulas for calculating it, and it's a function of two things. One is the number of people you sample, and the other is the relative proportions. When you get out to, like, if you have a 90% and 10% difference, you have a less exact estimate than if you have a 50-50 split.
So this poll that we're looking at, which unfortunately I can't seem to find, had, I believe, 900 people and a margin of error of 3.3%. Now, is that they're looking at the entire country, the population, the entire voting public?
I guess that would depend on... that really isn't generally the problem that you have. It's just trying to generalize to any large population. It could be the population of New York State or the population of the country. But the point is that if you sample from that population, the bigger your sample is, the more exact your estimates are.
Uh-huh.
So if they had sampled 2,000 people, they would have had maybe 1% error or
uh-huh.
something, or 2%.
And then after that point, it just keeps getting less and less and less.
Exactly.
I see. Okay, well, you see, that's never explained very well. Now, you wonder, you know, you see an ABC News poll with a 5% margin of error, and it sounds like they're saying, well, you know, we can't possibly be wrong any more than 5% because we're always right, you know, and it just seems kind of, I don't know, I don't understand how they could say that, but I think I understand what you're saying, though.
It's not wrong 5% of the time. It's within 5% of the number that they said, and you express that with a certain level of confidence. That's in the language of statistics.
Uh-huh.
Like you can say, I'm 95% confident that the real value is within 5% of the value that I got from my sample.
I never took statistics. I never wanted to. I never wanted to know about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, but in some ways it's relevant because people will misuse statistics considerably in the public domain.
So do you think it's fair to have so many statistics in elections, to have all these percentages and what-if polls? I mean, they have been proven to affect the actual elections, especially on election day when they project a winner at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah. I think it has that problem, and it also obscures some of the issues because, like you were talking about before, it takes on an aspect of sport rather than an aspect of beliefs and values. And actually, since you were talking about Jackson, I have very strong feelings about the fact that he has pushed other candidates to take stands on issues rather than allowing them to be obscure and to equivocate, which is the typical pattern for politicians running for office.
And he also hasn't gone out of his way to attack people. I have not seen a Jackson commercial that attacks Michael Dukakis or Al Gore and just does nothing else but attack them. He disagrees with these people in public, obviously, but too many times I see political commercials, and not just for president, local commercials, too, for city council or whatever, where they just attack either the person who's been in office or the person who dares to run against them while they're in office. And that's completely clouding the issues, and it's a real disservice.
Oh, yeah. It really degenerates, too. I agree completely that it's hard enough as a voter to find out the candidate's stances on the issues. I think we tend to blame the media and everything, but when I.F. Stone spoke here, he had a very interesting point, which is that that's the nature of politics, and that it may not just be the media who's making it a horse race or a sport, but it's often the nature of trying to gain broad support in a population where people have very different interests different values.
Well, the media really only gives us what we really want. And if we don't want to listen, if we don't want to think for ourselves, they'll be more than happy to let us be lazy and just listen to them and look at their numbers. So I think we as people have to always want more and always have to sort of explore for ourselves and find what other newspapers say, find what other radio networks and other countries, what they say. It's really up to us. No one's going to do it for us. And it's a lot easier for us here in America to sort of fall into this trap because we're so big. There's so much of America around us. We have borders with Canada and Mexico, which Mexico is different from Canada, obviously. But in Europe, you have all these different countries all clustered together. You can't help but hear other languages and hear radically different views. So you're all that much more attuned to different things. And that's how democracy is made.
Yeah, but I think that we tend to blame the media. I mean, I'm not being a media apologist, but I think we tend to blame the media, even in cases where the candidates themselves won't give the information that people would like to hear and won't provide their stands on certain issues. I think you're right. You really have to look all over the place to find it. And I personally tend to look more to the radical press, things like The Nation and The Progressive, to find what I consider to be more accurate information about a lot of what goes on in this country and in our foreign policy.
Yeah, too often the media is the scapegoat, and a lot of times the media provides a very valuable service. To this day, I believe the media had a lot to do with ending the Vietnam War. Certainly the people of this country did, but actually seeing what goes on inside a war, that affects people, and that makes them want to stop it all the more. And I guarantee you, if we saw pictures day after day of what was going on in Iran and Iraq and all the other wars around the world, we would be more interested in stopping them. But because we don't see that, and because now we don't see what's happening in South Africa, and Israel is trying to keep us from seeing what's happening there, we're not going to be speaking out as much against it. We won't be as upset. The media is very valuable, very important, and everybody wants to control it.
Yeah. Well, right now it seems to me that big money interests and large multinational corporations are controlling most of the American media, and I think that that's clear in some of what they present as reality to us.
Uh-huh. Well, as I've mentioned before, we will be having a very fine news program on this radio station, International National News, every weeknight at 6, starting on May 9th from the Pacifica Radio Network. And that's a daily newscast, which brings you the latest news from all over the place, behind censorship, South Africa, the West Bank, Washington, D.C., news you just don't see on ABC News and CBS and all that kind of thing.
Well, that's great to hear. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to that. That begins May 9th at 6 o'clock. So hopefully we'll spread the word of that around and a lot more people can hear a different aspect. We're not saying it's the truth. We're not saying it's what's really going on and everyone else is wrong. It's not that opinionated either. It's just a look through a different perspective. Media cannot possibly be completely neutral. There is always a slant to a story. And what the folks at Pacifica do is look at a story in ways other people do not look at a story, because they're either told not to, because they're afraid to, or because they just don't think of it. You know, and that's something that we're proud to be able to present. And that's what we as a non-commercial radio station should be presenting.
Yeah, I agree. I think you should be presenting a lot of other things as a non-commercial station, too, but I don't know if we should.
Well, write us a letter. Write us a letter and tell us what you think we should be presenting, because we're here for folks like you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that's it for the phone calls tonight. If you want to write us a letter, send it over to WUSB. If you want to send it to this particular program, write Brain Damage on the envelope, and it'll find its way over here. If you just want to send it to the station, just write the station, which is WUSB. And we're at the State University of New York at Stony Brook, New York. The zip is 11794. And, of course, our phone number is 516-632-6901. That's it for us this week. We'll be back again next week doing something else. We don't know what. We never know what we're going to do until it happens. But something goes on in the world. Something goes on in our backyard. You can bet we'll be talking about it. Eric Corley here for Brain Damage, thanking you for your calls, for your interest, and reminding you to just keep on listening, not just to us, but to everything that goes on around. It's so much fun. Stay tuned for the Brothers next with a couple hours of Lobotomy follows Brain Damage, and of course, Power Surge after that to get you all back into shape. It's 12 midnight, WUSB, Stony Brook.
On the grass, the lunatic is on the grass, remembering games, daisy chains, laughs. Got to keep the loonies on the path. The lunatic is in the hall. The lunatics are in my hall. The paper holds their folded faces to the floor. And every day the paper boy brings more. Oh, out the door, throw away the key. Someone in my head, but it's not me.
Concert Billboard for Sunday, April 17th. Tonight, John Renbourn and Ship of Fools will be at the Bottom Line, and Pudgy, Richard Belzer, and Emo Phillips will be appearing at Caroline's. Monday, April 18th, Hofstra Concerts presents The Alarm at the Adelphi Calderon. Love and Rockets and the Mighty Lemon Drops will be at Roseland. Mira Makeba, Sue Masekela, and the cast of Serafina will be performing at Radio City Music Hall. And Pudgy, Richard Belzer, and Emo Phillips will be at Caroline's. Tuesday, April 19th, Max Roach will be at the Blue Note. And Pudgy, Richard Belzer, and Emo Phillips will be at Caroline's. Wednesday, April 20th, Max Roach will be at the Blue Note. An evening with special effects at the Bottom Line. Alan King and Ben Vereen will be performing at Westbury Music Fair. Silent Listener, Vandal, and others will be at the Ritz. The Alarm will be at the Beacon Theater. And Pudgy, Richard Belzer, and Emo Phillips will be yucking it up over at Caroline. Thursday, April 21st, Max Roach will be at the Blue Note. The Almighty Gels will be at Sweetwater's. Henry Lee Summer will be performing at the Bottom Line. Alan King and Ben Vereen will be at Westbury Music Fair. Stanley Clark will be at the Ritz. And Pudgy, Richard Belzer, and Emo Phillips will be at Caroline's. Friday, April 22nd, Betty Carter will be appearing at Jazzport. Max Roach will be at the Blue Note. Peter Murphy will be performing at the Ritz. Toby Altman and her jazz trio will be appearing at Dining Car 1890. John Abercrombie Trio and Elements will be at the Bottom Line. Alan King and Ben Vereen will be at Westbury Music Fair. The Almighty Dells will be performing at Sweetwater's. Pudgy, Richard Belzer, and Emo Phillips will be at Caroline's. The Second City National Touring Company will be appearing at the Tillis Center. And Megadeth with Warlock and Sanctuary will be at the Beacon Theater. Saturday, April 23rd, Betty Carter will be at Jazzport. Max Roach will be at the Blue Note. Toby Altman and her jazz trio will be at Dining Car 1890. And there will be a 5th annual Faust Folk Music Show at the Bottom Line. The Almighty Dells will be at Sweetwater's. Alan King and Ben Vereen will be at the Westbury Music Fair. And Pudgy, Richard Belzer, and Emo Phillips will be at Caroline's. Ice House and Men Without Hats will be at the Beacon Theater. And at the Music Hall, Arla Guthrie will be appearing. Sunday, April 24th, Max Roach will be at the Blue Note. Alan King and Ben Vereen will be at Westbury Music Fair. The Minnesota Orchestra will be appearing at the Tillis Center. And Arla Guthrie will be at the Music Hall.
This has been the Counter Billboard for Sunday, April 17th. You can hear the billboard on WUSC Stony Brook weekdays at 3 and 9 a.m. and 4:30 and 10 p.m. and on weekends at noon and midnight. If you have any questions or need further information, please call us here at the station at 632-6901.
remember anyone.